So the last question I want to reflect back on was, I think, the one that I heard the most, which was, what about a PARP inhibitor after progression on a PARP inhibitor? And, you know, this is a common issue throughout oncology. One of the docs brought up breast cancer, where you go from hormone therapy, hormone, you know, people respond. And yet I really hadn't heard much information one way or the other. I sort of figured it probably wouldn't work with PARP. When I asked people, they would sort of generally say they don't know. I'm curious where we are today, because I saw some data, I guess it was your group who presented at SGO. That was the first time I think I've seen anything of people responding to one after another.
Yep. That's my fellow, Dr. Katie Essel, did that. It is the first time it's been reported. So that paper will be coming out. I'm very proud of her. It's a small data set, multi-institution, and we just really looked at patients who had received a prior PARP inhibitor, had at least two lines of PARP inhibition, and looked at what happened when they got it again. And really all we can say from that little study is that we did see patients respond to the second PARP, and they were primarily BRCA-positive patients who had received PARP inhibitor as part of frontline therapy, all of them on a clinical trial, you know, years prior. So they were not patients who had progressed on a prior PARP.
Right.
So that's all we can say right now, is that we did see responses. There's going to be another small data set coming out from the Quadra study soon, and so I can't comment on that data, but they allowed prior PARP to come onto Quadra, and so they're going to present, BJ Reimel from Cedars-Sinai is going to present that data in an upcoming meeting, looking at responses in patients who'd received a prior PARP. But really, the most important trial to answer that question is the OREO trial, which is taking patients who'd been exposed to a prior PARP, who are still sensitive to platinum or eligible for platinum, they get reinduced and respond, which is our most important clinical predictive biomarker for response to PARP, is responding to platinum. So you're picking out your patients who respond and then randomizing them to olaparib or placebo in that recurrent setting. And we'll see what the responses are. There's really a very recent rapid emergence of data trying to evaluate why patients develop PARP resistance. Dr. Liz Swisher's group just published on detection of BRCA reversion mutations from blood samples, from circulating tumor DNA, and that detection of those reversion mutations predicts resistance to treatment with rucaparib. So you could see that sort of a, if that's validated in at least BRCA patients, you could see that being used as a selection for if you're going to retreat someone with a PARP inhibitor in the future. There's many mechanisms of PARP resistance that we know of, sort of how we test for them and how that informs whether or not we reuse a PARP inhibitor is sort of the next big elephant in the room in terms of clinical questions. And those studies are actually being designed. So I do think there's a role for PARP after PARP. Certainly patients who were on SOLO 1 and got 2 years and came off, and hopefully they never recur, but if they recur 5 years later, why wouldn't I use a PARP again? If I could test her for resistance by that point, that would make it even better. But I do think we're going to use PARP after PARP in certain populations, but we're going to have to define them. It's an exciting time, but the trials are coming.
We're just planning a lung cancer conference. We're talking about checkpoint after checkpoint. So adjuvant durvalumab, what do you do on relapse? And actually, the case that sparked the discussion was a patient of one of these docs who was on the GOG early stage solo one kind of trial with veliparib, but the recurrence was like 3 years later. So to me, that's more like re-challenge rather than, you know, as you were saying, PARP progression.
Right. Your tumor didn't fail the PARP inhibitor. It didn't progress while you were on the PARP inhibitor. So my sense is that's going to be a very different population than someone that progresses during a PARP inhibitor. But even so, you know, if she responds to platinum again, does that mean she's not going to respond to PARP?
Right.
Bevacizumab is a completely different drug. But the MITO-MANGO study, which looked at Bev after Bev, if you'd asked me, I would have said the patients who progressed on Bev aren't going to get any benefit, and the patients who didn't progress while on Bev are still going to get benefit. And both groups benefited equally well, and I was very surprised by that. So sometimes our presumptions are proven wrong when we actually do well-designed clinical trials. So this is a question I think we are going to need to answer quickly, because PARP inhibitors are moving to the front line in a lot of patients. So they're going to be asking us that question, and we're going to have some answers that are based on science rather than empiricism, but we'll see what we can figure out.
And of course, we've had continued trastuzumab on progression and metastatic breast cancer forever. And it's another kind of model that sort of fits into that general category. This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special audio spinoff program developed from a satellite symposium held at the Society of Gynecologic Oncology's 2019 meeting.